It's Henderson versus the Commonwealth. If you all are ready, we're ready.
May I please report, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Please reserve 5 minutes. Thank you, Mr. Connell.
I'm here representing Gerald Henderson. He was tried back in October of last year. He waived his jury and was tried on attempted statutory burglary. And in the charging document, the indictment, it is under section 18.290 and 91. And of course, the way those two statutes interplay with each other, the court made a determination after the evidence was heard that this event actually occurred in the daytime. So it clearly put him into the statutory provisions of 91, which is if you commit any of the acts in 89 or 90 with the intent to commit assault and battery. And that's in the daytime. So that's what he was really charged with. And we're here to submit that he did not, in fact, commit that attempt to commit a breaking and entering in order to commit an assault and battery. And the reason here is there's so many different elements involved, because you have the attempt type of crime, which requires obviously the intent to commit the crime and then some positive affirmative act towards the completion of that crime. So you have to have both those elements come together. That's clearly what the law is here in Virginia. But this is what the defendant, Mr. Henderson, says. At least this is the testimony of what the voice is, and the victim said, I recognize the voice. So conceding it to be, for that purpose, the voice of the defendant, he says, I know you're in there, come out, I'm going to mess you up. Now, if he were going to break in order to commit the assault and battery, and this is our position, this is what he would have said. I know you're in there, come out. If you don't come out, I'm coming in to mess you up.
Isn't it a reasonable inference from the extended period of time that he was banging on the door that if the individual didn't come out, he would come in, and then, you know, pounding on the door for several minutes and then breaking the window and only leaving upon fear of being caught? Isn't that all reasonable inference from the record?
That is a reasonable inference, but it's not the only reasonable inference. And that's the point here, and that's where we believe that the court made the error, because the discretion of the judge, sitting as trier of fact here, to determine what is all that information that you have in testimony. It's very short testimony, 25 pages of testimony, it's very short. But when you have that, what does that really mean? You have the victim saying, I hear this voice, I recognize the voice, and there's this pounding on the outer door. Now what you have is a foyer type of arrangement in which the outer door is being pounded upon, not the victim's door himself. Now, if you're in a multi-level apartment, for example, and somebody is trying to break in, and they're pounding on the downstairs entry door, that does not constitute an attempt to break into my apartment on the second floor, the third floor, or any other floor.
Calling his name
is saying that's a threat. That may be something else, but that does not necessarily tie in and say, I am going to come inside and assault you. Specifically when he says, and this is the victim's testimony, I'm going to mess you up. If the victim believed he was going to break in, he would have said, if you don't open up or you don't come out, I'm coming in to get you. But the victim doesn't say that. That is the most logical
thing. Again, though, isn't it a reasonable inference from the record that follows?
It is one reasonable inference, but it's not the only reasonable inference. And when you've got...
It's the one the trier of fact believed.
It's the one that he believed. And our position is that that's an abuse of discretion. He just got that wrong, because there's nothing else that suggests he was actually going to assault the man, Mr. Williams, inside Williams's apartment. He's clearly saying, this is what I want to do. I want to come in. If, you know, if you let me in, I'd like to come in. But if you don't let me in, there's nothing I can do. There is no attempt at that point. There's no, that's been the second argument on the intent to commit the assault. But here, you don't even have the attempt to break in at the same time that you have to have the intent to get in for the assault. You've got to break it down and be honest. The Attorney General says that I don't have to, that there's no case law, there's nothing that says that you have to show completion of every act, every element, that you've got to show reasonable doubt of every element, you know, in some sort of an order or some sort of thing like that. I just don't think that's correct. The case law is clear that the Commonwealth's requirement is to prove beyond reasonable doubt every element of the crime. And when it comes to an attempt, you've got to put the intent to attempt the crime together with the attempted entry. Here, if you had broken the window, and there's some other cases there about screen doors and glass doors and all that sort of thing, here it would make sense, and I would agree with the Commonwealth's position a little bit more if this is what happened. There's a broken glass, and now you find his fingerprints on the casement outside the glass or on the wall or something there, where he's attempting now to go in. There's nothing. The victim also testifies that after the banging stops, they leave. He never identifies who they are. There's another actor here, apparently, which never surfaces. There's never any more questioning about that. It's just left out there. They left. There's no description of who the other person is. The victim does give the police a description of the defendant simply because he's a stepson. He meets stepson, and he knows the man, so he gives that description. He does not say that he is doing, that he has any particular instrument or weapon. In fact, he affirmatively testifies there is no weapon. So we totally remove the whole idea of use of, constructive type of breaking, because there's no instrument that's being used. There's a banging, but there's nothing that says he was using this baseball bat. He's found later with a baseball bat, but that's not in the evidence at all. And you can infer that, and the court did infer that, but that doesn't make it the instrument that was being used. He was just banging on the door.
The defendant is sweaty. He's been in some sort of a workout. He's carrying a baseball bat, and somebody has just spent 15 minutes banging on this metal door. It certainly is a logical inference, isn't it, that banging was done by the baseball bat, and it was done after the defendant called to the victim and said, come out so I can mess you up, when the victim didn't cooperate. Then there's 15 minutes of a baseball bat beating on the door. Isn't that another way by one's actions to say, all right, I'm coming in after you?
Except for the fact that there is no damage to the door. If he was beating on it with the baseball bat, the door would have had some damage.
Well, it's a steel door. And Williams testified that whatever it was that was hitting, it was hard enough that it was beyond what you could do with your fists.
And if that is the case, there had to be some sort of a mark. There's got to be some sort of tool mark on it. If you hit a metal door or a wooden door, any kind of door, if you hit it with a baseball bat, a wooden bat, aluminum bat, metal bat, there's going to be some sort of mark on that door. There is nothing. There's nothing on
there. But you don't have any evidence.
No evidence.
As to whether there was or wasn't a mark on the door.
And that's the Commonwealth's problem. They can't present that evidence that this is how he was trying to break in. There is no evidence of that.
There is evidence of 20 to 25 minutes worth of banging and breaking of a window. And then
you have the officer's testimony that he arrives. This all begins about 6:30, according to the victim. So it would be ending about 7. The officer who first responds says, Del Monte, I arrived about 9:32. This is 2.5 hours after the noise stops. I mean, the timeline, if we're going to talk about timeline, just the timeline's not matching up there with what the victim is saying happened. Now, the other explanation for the condition of the defendant when he is apprehended is that he had been driving on his, riding his bicycle for some distance, some fair amount of distance, and that is the reason that he was sweating, because he had been on the workout with the bicycle. But if
he gave a false name to the police officer, right?
Yes, Judge Jeckert, and I have almost every client at some point giving a false name to someone who speaks to them on the street. That's
still evidence.
It's evidence, but it doesn't actually go to the intent to break in or the intent to commit an assault and battery. It's evidence of some sort of disposition to avoid contact with the police. I will just say it that way. But nothing that actually affirmatively moves the case further along in his attempt to break in or his intent to commit the assault and battery inside the apartment, which is what the Commonwealth has to prove. It's got to prove those elements, and they just didn't prove all those elements. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Bumgarner.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Susan Baumgartner for the Office of the Attorney General. I first wanted to clear up a couple factual issues, one of which is that there was no other person present. There is no evidence that another person is present, although the victim did say they had left. On page 18 of the appendix, he was asked to clarify, and he said he did not hear anyone else outside his apartment. Also, there was some confusion over the time. The victim said he called the police at 6:30 or 7 while the defendant was banging on his door, and that the police arrived 20 minutes later. The police said they arrived at 9:30. Obviously, there's some confusion there. It appears the victim was confused about what time he called the police, what time the crime happened. Now, the Attorney General's position is not that we don't have to prove every element of the crime. The Attorney General's position is that every element of the crime in an attempt does not need to be attempted separately. The completed burglary would have required the breaking, the entering, the dwelling, and the intent to commit, in this case, the assault and battery. To prove the attempted burglary, we only needed to prove the intent plus one direct but ineffectual act. Here we clearly had the direct ineffectual act of shattering the victim's living room window. The intent to enter was proven by the pounding on the door with the bat, the breaking the membrane of the home by smashing the window, and also there was a threat and an attempt to have a constructive breaking. He attempted to lure the victim out.
Counsel, let me ask you, there seems to be some confusion about the door. The door is, through the evidence, the door is an outside door.
It's a little bit unclear in the evidence whether it's an outside door into the apartment building, into some sort of foyer, or whether it's the outside door of the victim's apartment. I didn't feel it was as clear as Mr. Powers did.
But it is clear that the window was to the apartment.
The window was definitely to the apartment, and the victim says he lives on the first floor.
If the purpose of smashing a window was to gain entrance to enter the dwelling place during the daytime, as opposed to just committing vandalism, then why wouldn't the assailant have entered once the window was broken?
Well, the victim testifies that he never looked out his window or the door. He stayed away from those because he heard the defendant out there. However, the police testified that someone gave them a description of the defendant carrying a baseball bat. So the inference there is that someone other than the victim spoke to the police and said there was a baseball bat involved, because the victim, of course, said only that there was some sort of weapon because the pounding was heavier than a fist, but he didn't see what the specific weapon was.
But the fact that the window was in fact broken and no entrance was made seems to suggest, doesn't it, that the defendant was content with just vandalizing the place as opposed to actually entering. That was not his intent to enter, he just wanted to create havoc.
Well, I think that was, his intent was for the fact finder. The fact finder found that he actually did intend to enter. Whether he intended the constructive burglary of luring the victim outside by committing that vandalism, or whether he intended to go inside and was scared away by someone else being present, or realized just how long he'd been there and that the police had likely been called, His intent was a factual issue for the jury. He also clearly had the necessary intent to assault and batter based on his words that he was going to mess him up. And that while he seems to have been interested in luring Williams out by staying, by continuing to come in the door, and by actually breaking the window, his intent seemed to be also to come in if necessary to accomplish his assault. And there's certainly nothing precluding him from holding two intents at once to either lure him out or. Are there any further questions?
Okay.
Can I ask you to affirm?
Thank you. Mr. Powers.
And very briefly, let me just address the idea here that the, in regard to whether or not the victim sees anyone else and all this other thing about these other people, hearing people and seeing people, two different things. He didn't hear anyone, and he clearly didn't see anyone else, but he still said they. I'm not sure how it is that he gets to multiples if he doesn't hear another, he doesn't hear another voice, but he obviously see somebody, but he doesn't give any kind of description. So I've just got a real problem with the victim and how his timeline, his entire matter of evidence goes, comes about here as to whether or not it really recounts the events as they occurred. The Attorney General says that the shattered glass is the breaking, and that's sufficient for a breaking. We're not arguing about that. The offense for which my client was on trial was, however, statutory burglary, which requires a breaking and an entering in the daytime. The court talked about making findings of fact. They made that finding of fact very clear. This happened in the daytime. So you've got to combine the breaking with the entry, and there is no evidence of entry. Now, so you can only get to an attempt of 91, which means I've now got to have some act in further trying to get in. That's why I say if you've got fingerprints on the outside of the window, on the casements, or he even makes the lift and the window is cracked or something.
But he used a baseball bat, and then he fled.
But that's not the apartment of Mr. Williams. That's the outer door. That's what I was saying. If you bang on the door downstairs on my third floor apartment, and you're talking about the main entry door, and you're banging on it, you're not trying to break into my
house.
But
he's on the first, this
But he's still got, that barrier door there. He's still got that barrier door, and
but somehow he gets to the window.
The window is right outside. He gets it. I agree that the window is broken, but you've got to combine both elements. He breaks the window. Does he break the window, as the court has suggested, simply because he wants to vandalize and destroy and harass Mr. Williams, and he just wants to make life miserable for him? Is he trying to just be nasty, or is he trying actually to get inside and assault the man? And that's the point
well,
that the court
then
has
then
to
you get to the point that he says, I'm going to mess you up.
He says, I'm going to mess you up. Come out. I'm going to do it. Now, that is not...
And the guy doesn't come out. So what happens when the guy doesn't come out?
Wisely enough.
You try and get it?
Wisely enough, he doesn't come out. But that's not a constructive breaking, because he's not... That's not an inducement for me to come out. If I say, come out, I've got... Name your street drug of choice. You know, okay, maybe he will come out. Or come out, let's go drinking. Come out, let's do something else. But he says, come out so I can beat you up, is not an enticement, so that's not getting you any further down the road on the...
But this is just an attempt crime.
An attempt.
This is attempt.
It is an attempt, but you still got to put that act together with that intent to do the assault battery inside there. And what I'm suggesting is that the evidence doesn't show that. It just shows, I want to beat you up out here. Come out in the yard and fight like a man. That's basically what's being articulated. Come out here and do it. I'm not saying anything. I'm staying here. I'm huddled down behind the couch, wherever I am. I'm staying away from the windows because I don't want the glass to get on me. I don't want a rock to hit me. I'm just cowering. Fear, intimidation, bad acts, illegal acts, nasty behavior, immoral, illegal behavior, but it's not an attempt to break and enter in the daytime to commit an assault and battery. It's a lot of things, but it's not that specific crime, and that's the crime he was charged with. And that's the point that we want to make here, and that's why we, in the intent section of the brief, and also in argument here, want to say that what you have is the wonderful event in this country, which is when I stand before the court, you got to prove all the elements, and you got to prove them beyond reasonable doubt. And you can't just suspect that I'm a bad guy, and you can't suspect that intent. You can look at the circumstances and the facts, but you've got to have more than they have in this case. We'd ask you to reverse.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
We'll come down and greet counsel, and thereafter.